Hi, and welcome to episode 8 of The Kitchen Hour. I'm your host, Megan Francis. I have to apologize. I know it's been a long time since our last episode, back in early December. I took some time off over the holiday, a much needed time off. And also, after doing 7 episodes right in a row, I just wanted to take a little time and figure out maybe how to make the show more fun, more entertaining, more helpful. And so I'm going to be introducing some new components of the show that I will be kind of unleashing here over the next month or so. So watch out for that. I've got a great show for you today. My friend Kate Hanley will be on. She's a yoga instructor, an author, and a life coach who focuses on helping moms kind of balance their lives and live more fully with less stress. She's great. Our conversation is hilarious. We go from talking about yoga and meditation to suddenly she's totally like giving me therapy right on the show. It's very fun. Before we go to the interview today, I wanted to talk a little bit about a blog post I put up earlier this week. The post is from January 22nd, and it's about reducing food waste. This is a big issue for me in my house, and it's something that it's taken me a long time to kind of come to grips with how much food we waste and how to kind of stop that. And when I first started, when I first kind of set up housekeeping, I guess, back when I got married, I really had this idea in my head that the more food I bought at once, the better. Like if I could buy everything on sale, I'd get better deals and then I could bring it home. And if I wanted to make something, I'd be more likely to have the ingredients on hand and all that. And there is definitely some logic to that. But what I've kind of realized over the years is I'm not organized enough to keep up. I'm just not naturally organized enough to keep up with a lot of food. I'm very out of sight, out of mind. If I don't see it, I literally would just forget about it. So for me, having a food, like a fridge stocked with perishables just means a lot of them are going to perish. Pantry is a little bit different. I often will buy things in bulk for the pantry, but I'm just finding now that when I have too much in my fridge, I forget what's in there. And another interesting thing that happens is that the kids also really get dependent on prepared foods. So like I always have in our freezer, you know, some frozen burritos or some frozen pot pies. Because once you've got teenagers in the house, it's not about 3 meals anymore. I mean, they have sometimes their after school snack is like 2 meals in one. So it's really helpful to have that stuff. But if I have so much of it that they never have to think beyond that, then they'll just reach for that every time. On the other hand, if I have a limited amount of that kind of stuff on hand, they'll kind of realize that I'm not going to be going to the store again. And so they'll go to use it, and maybe instead they'll decide to make something else. Like my son the other day decided there was no real snack food in the house that he wanted to make, so he decided to roast up some potatoes. And he just kind of came up with his own recipe, sliced up the potatoes. I gave him some very general guidelines of, you know, how hot to put the oven on and, you know, to oil the potatoes and that kind of thing. But he did it all by himself and he was really proud of it. And I don't think he would have done that if he had the opportunity to just reach into the freezer or the fridge and grab something that was ready to go. So I've really been focusing on buying simple ingredients. And here's the strategies I lay out in this post that are very simple and actually kind of no-brainers if you think about it, but they're also counterintuitive in a way. So my simple tips are, one, shop more often. I'm not into like the every two, 3 week shopping thing anymore. I can't do it. I buy too much at once. I gorge on food and then I forget what I have. And then I always end up forgetting something anyway and I have to go back out the next week. And to me, there's nothing worse than having just dropped like $300 at the grocery store thinking that you just did this massive shop and then having to go back out and buy more stuff. Number two is buy less food. I know that, again, sometimes that scarcity mentality kind of kicks in and you're like, but if I don't have anything on hand, there won't be anything to eat and I won't be able to make any meals. But really think about it. Like a really simple meal doesn't need that many ingredients. So if you've got basics on hand that you always have, like if you've always got olive oil and you've always got, you know, your basic herbs and spices, and you've always got just a few things like root vegetables this time of year, I always have carrots in my drawer. I know I'm always going to have celery and onions because I know if I have those things, I can make a meal even if I don't have a whole lot of other filler ingredients. So like tonight I'm making a roast. It may be, well, like 7 ingredients. And most of the stuff besides the actual meat are things I would have on hand anyway. Number three strategy is make simple crowd-pleasing meals. I go more into this in the post, but really I am of the mind that it makes a lot more sense when you've got kids in the house to learn how to make the most of the meals that will get a yay when you put them on the table instead of trying to struggle to come up with these really sort of exotic meals and have everyone kind of push them around on their plate. That's not to say there's no room for introducing those things into their diets. I try to do it in side dishes and snacks and just in less kind of, I guess, less basic ways. Like at dinner time, the last thing I want to be dealing with is a chorus of, you know, I just want everyone to sit down and have a nice time together, enjoy our meal, and eat something. So if I make a stew or a roast or a chicken or something like that, I know everyone's going to love it. And I don't have to really worry too much about leftovers and waste. Number four, though, is get creative with leftovers. That is something that took me forever. I would kind of have this bloated meal plan. I'd have a major meal scheduled for every night of the week. Well, what I found was that, so I'd have leftovers, say, from spaghetti, and I'd think, well, someone will eat these. Everyone loves spaghetti, and I'd put them in the fridge. But then the next night, maybe I would make tacos. Well, no one's going to eat the spaghetti when I've got tacos because everyone wants the tacos. So unless there was some way to use the ingredients for Monday night's dinner in those tacos, chances are good Monday night's dinner would just get thrown out. No one in my family is really that into reaching into the fridge and pulling out leftovers and eating them the next day. It just isn't really something that happens a whole lot. So I've been trying to get a little more creative about the way I use my leftovers. I come up with whole new meals. So either I'll plan two different side dishes to go with the main dish, or I'll turn it into something completely different. Like I actually wrote about in the post yesterday, I had made salmon the night before, and I was going to take the salmon and cook it up with some rice. Instead, the night before, we'd had potatoes and broccoli. But then I thought, well, maybe I could get even more creative and do something that the kids have never had. So I made salmon cakes, which they've never had before, and everybody loved them. They were really, really easy to make. I can post the recipe in the show notes. It was great. And honestly, it's all gone now. The salmon's gone. I don't know that it all would have been used up if I hadn't done that. And I didn't have to make a whole lot of other stuff to go with it. It was just kind of turning these this leftover salmon into like basically little meatballs. So that was really fun. And it was a really successful use of something that otherwise might have just gotten thrown out. And number five strategy is to shop the pantry and the freezer. I know I'm someone who loves to buy things on sale. I love to buy, for example, meat on sale and stick it in the freezer. But unfortunately, if it never gets taken out of the freezer pretty soon, it's no good anymore. And I'm the same way with pantry items. I don't know how many times I've bought 12 cans of black beans or 12 cans of tomatoes and then realized that I never got to that back can. So I've been trying to really, you know, give myself every now and then buy even less food so that I know at the end of the week, I'm going to have to really stretch out what I have. And sometimes, some weeks I'll just give myself like a $50 grocery week. And I'll say, this week I can only spend $50 in groceries. How am I going to spend it? And then I know that when I am done and it's maybe Friday and I've got two more days left to go before I go shopping again, or three more days, I guess. I usually go shopping on Mondays, that I'm going to have to make something with what I have. That means I'm going to have to dig into the freezer, dig into my pantry, and really use stuff up that otherwise might honestly just sit there forever. So those are my five strategies for reducing food waste. It's part of my series on simplifying shopping and saving money and just kind of meal planning the easy way, which is what I'm all about. Everything the easy way. Do it the easy way so that you keep doing it going forward. I would love to hear your thoughts about those strategies, about food waste. You can either weigh in on the post. Again, I can't really give you the whole URL. It's a little long, but the post is called Five Simple Strategies for Reducing Food Waste and Saving Money, and it's from January 22nd, 2013, in case you're listening to this in a couple of years or something. And you can leave me a comment, or you could send me an email to, Megan, M-E-A-G-A-N, at thekitchenhour.com. And I would love to hear your thoughts about it. Okay, so now we're going to move on to Kate's interview. It's fantastic, very funny. We really cracked up, so I hope you enjoy it. I'm here this week with my friend Kate Hanley, who is the creator of the website MsMindBody.com. Welcome, Kate.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Kate is also an author of the Anytime, Anywhere Chill Guide, right? Did I get that right?
It's actually the Anywhere, Anytime Chill Guide.
Oh, I knew I was going to reverse those.
No, don't worry about it. It happens all the time.
As well as a yoga instructor, and she does phone coaching and all kinds of cool stuff. And since we're since this is airing at the beginning of 2013, we all have New Year's resolutions on our minds, and we're all thinking about how to kind of improve our lives or maybe take some of the stress out of our lives. So it just seemed like a great time to have Kate on. I want to talk a little bit about meditation.
Okay.
Meditation is one of those things, and actually I had a podcast a few weeks ago with Gretchen Rubin where we were both talking about how meditation always feels like one of those things that we think we should do, but then when we go to do it, we hate it. And so then we're like, why am I torturing myself trying to do this thing that I hate?
Exactly.
And I'm just wondering if – I'm sure you run across that with a lot of your clients.
Totally. There's no law that says that you have to be sitting on a cushion in a dark, quiet room in order to meditate.
Okay. So the meditation police won't come get me if I walk around or
something?
Absolutely
not. Okay. And I mean, so that means that, like, I feel like I meditate while I do the dishes.
Okay.
I meditate while when I had young babies, I meditated while I nursed my babies to sleep. You know, I feel like there's ways to weave it into your life, and it's completely legitimate, and even in some ways, I think more powerful. Like, I think I can meditate in three breaths at the dinner table when somebody's pushing my buttons. Like, I think that is the most powerful meditation practice you can do, just to like shift your attention away from what's bugging the crap out of you and put it on your breath. And then you come back to the situation, you know, like three breaths. How long does that take? Maybe 6 seconds.
Right.
And it's just like you're a totally different person. You react in a different way. And then the rest of your interaction goes differently because you did that. So to me, those are the most powerful transformative practices you can do, like finding ways to be, to tune into your breath and to get quiet, which is, a lot of what meditation is in the midst of your daily life. Now, of course, doing it more formally in other parts of your life when you can makes it easier for you to remember to do that in the moment. I find like we all have situations where we're like, well, crap, I'm stuck. I have nothing to do. Like, what am I going to do now? Like, I went to the doctor the other day and they put me in the exam room and I'm sitting, you're sitting there by yourself for a long time and you're like, dang, why didn't I bring my magazine? That's the perfect time to meditate. That actually doesn't feel like torture because then you're like, oh, I get to do something constructive with
time. Right. Or while waiting in a long line or, waiting for the pot to boil or so. That makes a lot of sense. And
waiting in the car to pick your kid up from school.
Right. I think for me, the reason it's always felt a little forced, well, first of all, the position I always find, like that seated position, I find extremely uncomfortable, like to the point where it's like all I can think about is how uncomfortable I am. And then my mind wanders more. It's easier for me to focus on like my breath when I'm walking or, whatever, doing something with my body. It's almost like it takes my mind off of my mind, which didn't make any sense at all.
I compare it to like giving a puppy a chew toy. So your mind is the puppy and it's all over the place and it's like chewing on that couch leg and chewing that slipper over there. It's just like tearing into all these different thoughts and then you give it something to focus on, whether it's your breath or your feet walking, or like me, I love to meditate while I sweep.
Mm-hmm.
So like the bristles on the floor, I mean, whatever it is, it doesn't matter what your focus is. It takes your mind off your mind. Like it gives you, pulls attention away from those thoughts that are otherwise you're trying to sink your teeth into.
Right. And I like that you mentioned, a couple different things that you could do like during dinner with your family or while you're in the kitchen, because I know a lot of times I think what ends up happening and partly why I started kind of doing this daily, not every day, but, regular practice, I even think of it as this kitchen hour concept, is because if I look at it as something I'm doing that's constructive, even if it's kind of boring or, stressful or whatever, then it feels like it gives it purpose and it makes it so that, yes, I might be in the kitchen for a couple of hours and that's okay. I mean, I don't have anything else I have to be doing because I'm purposely here.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we just feel like we have to just like get in there and then just like whip something together as quickly as we can, throw it on the table, and then everybody had better appreciate it, darn it. And it just leads to so much, like, so the dishes, we don't want to do the dishes. We rush through it.
Right.
We don't really want to cook, so we rush through that. We really want to get to the part where we're at the table, but then we don't really enjoy that either because we're such a frazzled mess by the time we get there.
So. Yeah, well, Thich Nhat Hanh, he is a Vietnamese Buddhist monk.
You've got to spell that name because that's the first time I've ever heard it pronounced out loud, and I've avoided pronouncing it on purpose.
Okay. Let me see if I can spell it. This is like a pop quiz. So Thich is T-H-I-C-H, Not is N-H-A-T, and Han, I think, is H-A-H-N.
Okay, yes, I think you're right. It's definitely H-A-H-N. I know that for sure.
Yeah. So in his book, The Miracle of Mindfulness, this is an incredible book to keep on your bedside table and just like dive in when you need to feel a little more centered, grounded, what have you. He talks about washing the dishes to wash the dishes. So most of us wash the dishes to get washing the dishes over with.
Right.
And he talks about, you know, really using all your powers of mindfulness, like tuning into your senses, feeling the water in your hands, listening to the clunk, clunk, clink of the dishes in the sink, feeling your feet on the floor, like just sinking into it. And then, you know, just using that as an occasion to practice. And I love that so much because we do, you know, like doing the dishes isn't really that bad. It's the angst that we have about having to do the dishes that's terrible. That's torture. Why am I doing the dishes? Why isn't my husband doing the dishes? How do we have so many dishes? Like, you know, that's what wears you out. But when you can kind of transform that into a time to decompress, you know, it's kind of like your kids are going crazy in the living room and you're like, you know what? I'm going to do the dishes because I'm just going to like, go into
myself. Check out of this for a while.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And then just like, it changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
It changes you from like getting mad at your husband for not doing it. Like that goes away. That's pretty major.
Yeah. And you know, another thing, and you mentioned, you know, doing the dishes and we have this angst about it. Like I have to do the dishes. Why am I the one? And the other thing is all the things we think we want to be doing more than doing the dishes, which I think is like such a, when it comes to anything like housework or cooking or doing the dishes or doing some boring thing, a lot of times what gets me, what trips me up is that I think I've got other better things to do or more important things to do. And so it's nice to be able to say like, this is just as important. Like this is just as much life as that other thing I was going to do, which was usually something stupid anyway.
Yeah, because think about that. Like if you can decompress while you're doing the dishes, you're going to come out. You're not going to snap at your kids. Your kids aren't going to grow up thinking that dishes are a pain in the butt to do.
Right.
You're gonna take away a bone of contention between you and your spouse. I notice myself, a lot at bedtime. So I work during the day when my kids are in preschool, and then I knock off early and I hang out with them and we cook dinner and we do bath and we do bedtime and everything, and I'm putting them down and I haven't checked in on my email since like 3 o'clock, you know, so by the time it's 7:30, I'm like totally.
You got anxiety.
I'm like got an eye twitch. And I used to always think like, can you just go to sleep so I can get back to my to-do list? You
know? Right.
And it's kind of that same thing that you're talking about, like, oh, I have to do this and it's keeping me away from doing something important. But any activity that you're doing, if you could just like sink into it and just, God, I want to say be here now. And that's kind of so trite. And, but, you know, like instead of being like, okay, well, I'm going to do this so I can go do the next thing. Then you're just thinking about the next thing and you're angsty. If you're like, oh, we're doing bedtime. You know, I fight with my daughter less. It takes less time because I'm not saying like, why aren't you putting your PJs on? Put your jammies on.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like, let's make a game out of putting your jammies on. Like, oh, this is all I'm doing. And the amount of time is the same or less. And then I'm not a basket case when I walk out of her room. And so I can sit down and like actually be focused and get a ton done in 30 minutes.
Well, and you know, it's so funny because the hurrying thing, which I think is one of the banes of, you know, parenting these days, is the feeling like we're just in a hurry to get to the next thing. And maybe just a bane, you know, maybe it's just life in general, not just parenting, but it doesn't actually save you time. You know, in the end, it doesn't save you any time because you either make a shortcut that then you have to go back and fix later, or whatever it is you're hurrying up to do isn't really a constructive thing anyway. Like really, it's we forget sometimes how expansive time really can be when we just focus on what we're doing while we're doing it.
It's so true. And all that hurrying, when you do get to the next thing, like it takes you a while to settle down from being all amped up.
Right. Yeah. I have a funny story about that. I have this grocery store that I go to sometimes, and it's the produce section is like kind of like a snake. Like you're kind of trapped in there. They make it like this maze. So you go in, it's not like a big grocery where you can kind of just go wherever you want in the produce area and pick what you want and then go back to the main aisle. You actually are kind of winding down this path.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't feel like you want to turn around and go back. I don't know why they designed it that way, but maybe maybe there's some psychology at play here. So at the front when you first walk up is where there's all the conventional vegetables. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they've got like the carrots and the lettuces and all that stuff are like right at the beginning. And so I'm like, I'll buy organics when I can afford them or when they're on sale, but I often also don't. So yeah. I'll put like the non-organics in my cart and then I go around the bend and I get to the organics and, you know, like probably 25% of the time there's some awesome sale.
Yeah.
And then I stand there and have like a conundrum for like 5 minutes. Like I'll literally sometimes stand there and argue with myself holding the organic carrots and the non-organic carrots. I'm like, well, what am I supposed to go back now? I'm so right. like disproportionately flustered by yeah. this fact that I have to now turn around and go back. It will take me 25 seconds at most.
Right. I hear you though. Yeah. I mean, like going to the grocery store, that's a perfect example of something that you have to get through.
Right.
Right? Like, let's start here.
And in a particular order, you feel weird if you go like out of order, if you have to go back a couple aisles, like you've just blown it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, depending on time of day, you may have just blown it.
That's true. Completely. That's true.
Crowded in there. But yeah, I mean, that's another thing. Like, I sort of love going to the grocery store. I hate unpacking the groceries. Like, that drives me crazy. But like being in the grocery store, I sort of love it. And I have just kind of recently decided to, because we only have one car, my kids go to school in two different directions, and my husband works in the next town over. You know, like for me to have the car to get to the grocery store is kind of it's not a big deal, but it's a deal.
Right.
And so I was getting sort of angsty about going to the grocery store, and I love going to the grocery store. So recently I was just like, I love going to the grocery store. Like when I go, I'm just going to like love the experience. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean I wouldn't get pissed off if somebody ran over my foot or something.
Right, right, right.
Just in terms of like doing the grocery shopping to do the grocery shopping, not to get out of there.
Well, and it's true because you can totally change the way you feel. Like you can change the way you feel about something just by kind of declaring, I'm going to change the way I feel about something. It's I'm going to enjoy this. And if it takes me a little longer, you know, that's fine. I don't have anything better to be doing in the next 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I actually wrote a blog post about this last year where another thing I had found myself doing, which is why I decided to kind of slow down. And it just doesn't mean it always comes easily to me, but at least now I'm able to kind of override that react. Because there would have been a time in my life where I would have been like, screw it, I'm just getting the carrots I've already got. I'm not going back. And it would have just kept going. So I've come a long way. But I had a moment where I realized when I got to the car that I had forgotten something really, really important, like milk. I mean, I wasn't going to need it right then, but like I'd need it within the next day.
Yeah.
And I sat in the car and was like, should I go back? Should I go back? I mean, if I go back, what a hassle. It's kind of crowded in there, blah, blah, blah. I was actually considering going home and then coming back the next day, you know, because it was so silly because it would have taken like half an hour more to go all the way home and then return another day.
Yeah.
But I considered it strongly. So, I don't know. The mind plays tricks on you sometimes.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, because it does feel like we need linear, we crave sort of linear progression.
Right. It would have felt like, like backsliding or something almost. Because in my head, I was like, the grocery's done. Check that off the list. Now I can go home and unload, which I also hate doing. Check that off the list. And if I'd had to go back, then that would have been like, I don't know, like I was going back, you know, like losing. Like losing ground against the daily
grocery
struggle.
Store, one. Yeah. Megan, zero.
Exactly. But, you know, I think just recognizing that your mind plays tricks on you like that and that you can override it.
Yeah,
is absolutely. Really important.
Yeah, it's like, it's revelatory to kind of, and that's like, that's meditation to me. Mm-hmm. Noticing when you're kind of getting spun out by something and then choosing to redirect.
Okay. I like that definition. That helps. It makes it feel more like action, which I like. I like action. Mm-hmm. But it makes it feel more, I guess, practical. I think there's this image of people sitting around on you know, mats like saying om, which is, you know, is part of what the experience is, or I guess what the image is all about. But it's not – what something looks like is not necessarily what it is.
Right. Right. The form over function or
right.
something.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And plus, like, I don't know, there's something about my legs. They just don't go in that position and it hurts.
Well, you know, that's why yoga, asana, like the physical practice of yoga is all about to get you ready to sit.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
I mean, But even ancient yogis admitted that it was kind of a bitch to sit in the meditation pose, yeah. basically. Yeah. We have to bear.
Do you, when you lead your teach classes, do you end with a longish meditation session at the end? Do you do guided, visualize it? Like, just curious how yours go.
Yeah. Well, I don't teach classes on a regular basis. Okay. So I do the retreats.
Right.
And that really varies according to, I mean, I set an outline for what we're going to do before I go in there, but it kind of depends on the energy of what's going on, like maybe what's come up that we're talking about might dictate me switching from that agenda and doing something else. But typically, we're more active in the morning. You're like okay. maybe a little bit nervous about what the heck is going to go on today. So let's get into our bodies, you know, and immediately like get into that quieter space. And then once we're in that quieter space, we'll do a little meditation and maybe some breathing to kind of really get us there. And then we take a break for lunch. And then we take a break actually where when the weather's nice, we go out and take a hike by yourself. I'm not with you. We meet back for lunch. You get some time to just kind of integrate and decompress even more and just be with yourself. God, it's so rare that we get to really do that in a constructive way. So in the second half of the day of the retreat, we're like building on the quiet that we've already created in the morning by mm-hmm. like the physical practice and the walk in the woods and kind of diving deeper by doing restorative yoga, which really gets you into a juicy, relaxed, noodly state. And then when you're there, that's when I typically guide you through the guided visualization so that you can really like go there.
Right.
It's really cool. And then based on what you hear or what you see or what you experience in that guided visualization, then we end the day by making some commitments going forward to how we're going to integrate what we discovered.
Can you give me some examples? Like say someone just was kind of clueless and didn't really know how to do that.
Yeah. How to do what?
So like they've learned all these things, you know, they've had these experiences during your retreat and they've maybe tapped into some themselves a little more than they usually, or they found quiet, which you're so right. I mean, how often do we actually as moms or parents just get to be quiet with ourselves? I mean,
yeah,
it doesn't totally. Happen very often. So this has all happened and they maybe have taken away some strategies for stress relief and all that kind of thing. So, and meditation in real life, how do you kind of, if now they're like, well, blah, now I'm going to go home to my real life and how right. in the world am I going to do all these things that I did because I was quiet?
Right. Well, a couple of different ways. So I'll have them write down something that's bothering them or something that they're kind of ready to be done with and put it on a piece of paper when they first get there. We put it into a goldfish bowl. And then at the end of the day, you can decide if you want to take it back.
Okay.
Do you know, mm-hmm. it might be something like, you know, I've written down before, like I feel chubby.
Then at the end of the day, you no longer do.
Well, at the end of the day, I don't really want to carry that around with me.
Okay, I see what you mean.
Just like that consciousness of, is my belly going to be hanging over my yoga pants?
Gotcha.
Kind of. So there's that. And then, you know, we'll do a guided visualization when you are in that dreamy open state about see yourself on your best day 6 months from now. What are you doing? Who are you with? How do you feel? You know, and like really visualize kind of like really see one of your best visions for yourself. I mean, when do you even get that kind of information? I mean, you can kind of, you know, in your daily life, you might think, oh, there's got to be a better way. I don't know what it is, you know, and this is really asking like your subconscious. So what could be better? What would work for us? And you'll just see something there. Like it'll be, maybe it's just a feeling that you have in that moment, or maybe it is literally something that you're doing. I had someone in a retreat that I led who saw herself, her husband is Honduran and they spend a lot of time in Honduras. And she was like, I saw me like cutting the ribbon at an orphanage in Honduras.
Wow.
That's very specific and
right.
very big, you know, I was like, whoa, if this comes to fruition. Like,
right.
But I mean, it is like, you don't really know what's going to show up. And I mean, it could just be like a snippet of you lying in a hammock being quiet. And so it's
right.
just about like, so how am I going to build time for reflection into my life? And then based on what you hear in that visualization, I'll have you write down, you know, everybody gets a journal when they come to the retreat. So, you know, journal about like what you saw there and what you want to commit to. And then we share what we're committing to by the time we leave. And we follow up on email. I follow up with phone calls to everyone who comes to the retreat just to see how they're like integrating. Because my purpose in having these retreats is to really affect lasting change. I mean, it's not like you go get a massage and you come home and stub your toe and you're pissed off all over again. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Because that's the point. I mean, how even money notwithstanding, it's difficult, like you said, to put aside time for something like that. I mean, if I have a weekend to spend, chances are good I'm going to want to spend it with my family. And if I'm not spending it with my kids, I want to spend it with my husband. You know, so I don't get that many opportunities to do something that's that me-focused.
Yeah.
So it's like you have to find a way to make it last and to kind of extend that feeling and figure out how to help yourself
totally.
Do those things as well.
Really powerful. And I mean, you could maybe go on a weekend. There's a lot of weekend retreats. Like here in New England, there's Kripalu and Omega and stuff like that. But like you say, if you have a free weekend, it's going to be hard to dedicate that whole time to yourself.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. Well, Kate, we have to take a quick break. We'll be right back because I want to talk more about the things that get women and everyone stuck sometimes and kind of how to work through those things. So we'll be right back. Hi all, Megan here. Hey, did you know that there are recipes on thekitchenhour.com? I've got a few from some of our guests on the shows. Like, for example, I've got a French onion soup from Food Network star Melissa D'Arabian and Grandpa pancakes from Kelly Hampton. I've also got a couple of my own recipes. Like, recently I put up my epic bacon, egg, and blue cheese green salad recipe, which makes a really nice, hearty meal. You can have it by itself for lunch or with your dinner. It's yummy, and really, who doesn't love adding bacon to pretty much anything? Go ahead and check it out. It's at thekitchenhour.com/recipes. Thanks, and back to the show. Hi, and welcome back to The Kitchen Hour. I'm here with Kate Hanley, who is the creator of MsMindBody.com. We've been talking about Kate's retreats. She holds one-day retreats in Massachusetts that are a combination of yoga and meditation and talking about things that women have going on. And we were just talking about taking time for ourselves and also trying to incorporate the things that maybe you learn in meditation or yoga into our daily lives. So welcome back, Kate.
Thank you.
One thing I wanted to ask about, and I have to apologize, I've been sick for the last week and I had really bad laryngitis and it feels like it's starting to go again. So I have this little squeak. So
okay.
I think I sound kind of sexy, but.
I think so too.
So I wanted to ask one thing that came to mind when you were talking about people feeling so Kate had this really great example of a woman who at the end of the day, they were talking about sort of bringing these ideas or these things that they had in their minds that they wanted to do to life. And this woman just came out and said, I want to start an orphanage in Honduras. Okay. So that's pretty profound, right? And pretty amazing and very specific. But I wonder how many people have a big thought like that, Kate, and then think maybe after they leave and the high wears off, I could never do that. You know, because sometimes I think we feel like we're victims of our own circumstances. Like we could never change something that, I really hate it when I hear someone say, I could never, or that would never work.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's really common. You know, you get these flashes of insight and you totally just resonate with it. Every cell in your body is like, yeah, that's it. That's happening. I totally believe it. And then you kind of get away from that moment and, or maybe you share it with someone and they say, really?
Right.
You know, and all of a sudden you're like, oh yeah, that was crazy.
Crazy. I could never do that. Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe it's not even a critic, but it's like, you just go home and you're like, oh yeah, but like, I don't have any money or my kids are in school here. How am I going to go to Honduras or whatever it is. I'm not saying everyone needs to like start an orphanage in Honduras, but smaller goals too.
That is a big one. And that's easy to see how you might get derailed by that. However, that's really where, first of all, community plays a really important part. And that's an aim of my retreats, is to put you in touch with like-minded people that you can stay connected to. if you are hanging out with people who share your belief that the great things are possible, do you know, you're less right. likely to get talked out of it.
Totally agree. Wait and hold off and don't tell people about, don't tell everybody about it until it's starting to actually happen.
Yeah, I mean,
pick and choose.
Yeah. I'm sure you have a sense of who in your life you can share things, big ideas with, and who right. is better to wait until it's actually happening.
Yes.
And a lot of times there are people that we're really close to, like your mom or your brother, or whatever. They're well-meaning, but they can like squash your dreams like a bug
right.
just by
caring
kind of
too much.
Reflecting. Yeah. And maybe reflecting a fear that you have that you're choosing to not pay attention to.
Exactly. One example that made me think of what you were just talking about is we're planning this trip to Ecuador with our family next year. And we're going to go for like 6 months, take the kids out of school. It's going to be kind of a major deal.
Awesome.
And I just feel like if we don't do it now, it's not going to happen. And when I first, you know, we've been researching this for a long time and thinking about it for a long time, but we finally just made the decision to go forward. And I made a mistake that I was so excited about that I told a lot of people that maybe I shouldn't have told right away. And then they would bring up these sort of, they would bring up objections that I wasn't really in a position to argue, even though I kind of knew in my heart everything would be okay. I just wasn't really, I mean, I should have chosen other people. I should have gone to the cheerleaders first.
Yeah.
And then had them kind of give me the rah-rah confidence so that by the time I went to family members who might be a little more negative about it, usually just because they're concerned about us, that they also have a very different idea about what it means to go to, you know, a developing country, for example, than
sure.
what is actually true in some cases. By the time I finally like went to those people, the plan would already be in place. So it would be sort of pointless for them to try to talk me out of it. And I wouldn't yeah. feel so deflated.
Right.
And the other thing I think has been interesting about it is as we've been sharing it with people, I hear a lot of, people say like, I could never do that, or I wish I could do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really an interesting way to feel about somebody, something somebody else is doing, because I know that I've fallen into that trap too, where I'll think something sounds awesome. Like for a while I was reading a lot of blogs by people who are homesteaders, like live off the grid, you know, have like organic goat farms or whatever. And I would think, oh, I wish I could do that, but I never could. But then what I realized is that it's not that I really couldn't. I mean, if I really wanted, if that was my pinnacle goal,
yeah.
we could sell all of our stuff, move off the grid,
yeah.
raise goats, whatever, leave behind our current employment or whatever it is. But the truth is, I just don't want it badly enough to make
yeah.
those sacrifices. And I think that's a really important distinction
yeah.
to make in your head when you feel like you can't do something.
Right. Well, that's why I have two things to say about that. And the first is, that's why my new favorite phrase is, where there's a want, there's a way.
Yeah, I like that.
I mean, I think that, you know, we grow up hearing where there's a will, there's a way. So if there's some big undertaking, any big undertaking through that lens feels like hard, like work, like you're going to have to,
right.
You know,
like
clench your teeth,
and
dig your heels in. And it's just going to be like so hard. It's like the American myth, you know,
right.
American dream
right.
is arduous. I mean,
right.
let's be honest. It's all about like how much, if you work hard enough, it'll all happen. And to me, when you're really clear on what your desire is, like your heart's desire, what you truly want for yourself and your family, like for you in this instance, like your kids, seeing another culture and another way to live and recognizing that it's not all about how well you do in school and, you know, like
right, right.
when you're clear on the desire, then it like burns through the obstacles. You're still going to have obstacles. You still have to do the footwork, but it's just, you've got that spark behind you to carry you through, and it's got, you've got the resolve too to handle the naysayers or the people who furrow their brows at you. And if you don't have that confidence, you know, a wrinkled brow from your mom can kind of have you questioning like, oh God, maybe it's not possible. You know, they don't even have to say anything. They don't really have to poke holes in your theory. They just have to kind of look at you funny.
Right. Yeah. But, and it seems like that could happen with big and small things. I mean, something like going to another country or even something smaller.
Yeah.
You know, like I want to write a book in my spare time, which,
sure.
you know.
Moving, looking for a new job.
Right.
In a relationship. You know, if you really have to be clear on your desire.
Right. Yeah.
And you had asked before, like, how do you really integrate changes into your life? And I was talking about the power of community, and that is so true. But also, that's where coaching comes in. Because that's where you have the space to share your dreams and to uncover the desire and to look at the beliefs that would keep you from that desire, you know, because we all have old ideas that we don't even recognize that we have. That's how old they are. And that's, they are what make you say, oh, I could never do that.
Right.
Because of course, you know, it's like my kids, they'll be like trying to do their buttons and they'll be like, I can't do it. And then of course they do it in a second. Like,
yeah.
So, you know, a coach can like help you work through the resistance, provide total objectivity, have faith in you when your faith in yourself wavers, because you know how you can see in someone else what's possible for them in a way that they can't.
Right.
You know, like your friend who's single and dating, and you're like, I know he's there. I know you're going to find him. And your friend is going to have moments where she's like, oh, never going to happen. And just accountability too. Like, are you taking the steps?
The accountability is really important.
Yeah.
Because it's, if you don't voice it to somebody who cares enough to actually make sure that you follow through. Because if you voice it to somebody else who's just like, whatever, and they forget about it, or don't want to bring it up later because they don't want to offend you or whatever, you know, it's very easy to just kind of be like, yeah, that crazy idea I had. It's,
yeah.
It's good to forget about that.
It's really, really invaluable. And it's not a shrink who's just going to listen and like try and guide you through as through just, you know, like not giving any feedback, you know?
Right. Talk a little bit about coaching, because I think a lot, sometimes people think of coaching as being more like related to business or, you know, getting a job. So how is personal coaching different?
Personal coaching is different. Well, personal coaching is basically, it adheres to the philosophy that how you're being in one part of your life is how you're being in all parts of your life. So it's not like you're going to have just a problem at work, because whatever that problem is, if it's a problem with authority or feeling stifled or feeling stymied like that, I guarantee you 100% is happening in all parts of your life, in your relationships, in your inner dialogue. And if you can get at the root of what's going on there, then it like lightens up everywhere.
Right.
And so it's really about, you know, we're in this culture where you like read magazines and read self-help books and you set goals and, you know, it's the new year. We all made resolutions and it's like, yeah, we can do it. We're like bootstrappers in our society. And we have this like self-made myth thing that we're all trying to live up to. But, you know, when like your good intentions never manifest into anything and you're starting to get really disappointed about it and just yourself, like, it just is basically making a commitment to grow and change and paying money to someone else, showing up regularly for appointments, sharing what's really going on, like what's really going on. Because a coach will ask you, what's really going on? It's not it's not like your friend who will just probe, you know, ask nice questions and keep it chitty chatty.
Well, and what I love, what shows me that it works is that you coach, but you also – have a coach, don't you? Or at least have worked with coaches before.
I absolutely do. No, I continue to work with a coach. A coach needs a coach. Absolutely.
Yeah. Because you can't really coach yourself. It's just that same thing. I mean, you all your own crap would get in the way.
Yeah, you really can't. And yes. And yeah, I don't want to bring my own crap to my clients. And, you know, there's so much more that I'm capable of. And I've been working with a coach for a long time. It's like peeling an onion, you know? You take away a layer and then kind of you recognize that there's still another layer underneath you, type of a thing.
Right.
There's a phrase in the personal development world called new level, new devil. but it's just about like continuing to progress, like grow, change, and evolve, which I'm all about. Like, I love it. It's so exciting.
Well, so what are some of the things, you know, we're talking about some big things like big commitments to make in the new year. And I'm a big idea person. I love to come up with big things that I want to do and take the world by the horns. But then there's also the small things too that can have such a big impact. I'm wondering what some of the common things are that the women who come to your retreats feel stuck with that maybe we wouldn't even see. They maybe seem like more minor things that are actually pretty major.
Right. Things like, okay, I was talking to a client today and she was telling me about how she was decluttering her house.
Uh-huh.
Right. And she's like, you know, I usually do this and it makes me feel better, but I'm just pissed off right now. I am so mad. I'm like, what's going on? What did you find in there? She's like, it's all this stuff that my mom has given me. She's got a mom who's like one of those QVC shoppers. And you know, and so she's constantly sending her like 12 pack pots and pans.
Right.
Or like 12 muffin tins or something. And, you know, she's like, I get so mad because I look at all this stuff and I'm like, well, what happens when it comes to the door? She's like, oh, I just look at it, I get upset, and then I stick it away somewhere. Thank God I have enough closets. And, you know, so like, that's clutter. Clutter is the what she thinks is the issue, but the issue is that
is not clutter.
It's not clutter. It's that when unpleasant happens, she doesn't look at it, she shoves it away.
Right. You know, that's so interesting because we're so culturally obsessed with clutter.
Yeah.
And like obsessed, I mean, you go on like on Facebook or something. I couldn't even count on both hands how many times I see someone say during the day, I have so much clutter, I'm going to declutter, weekend goal decluttering. And I'm all about decluttering, but it's like, if you're doing it, sometimes there's decluttering just because you have some extra stuff and you want to organize it. And then sometimes there's like using it as a Band-Aid.
Yeah. Well, if I just get my cabinets in order, then everything will be cool.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And that's so true. Like that could be a totally kind of covering up a much bigger issue.
And so in this instance, it's like an issue with her mom, clearly, and setting boundaries. But it's also an issue of like, she also initially wanted to work with me because she's like tired of being at the weight that she's at.
Okay.
But if she doesn't deal with things that upset her and she just shoves it away, like that's what she's doing with food.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's not... I mean, you could work with like a nutritionist or a weight loss coach or somebody who would maybe just work with you around the arena of food. And that's great. But to me, I more want to dive down into like that relationship with her mom, where she learned that she had to just hide stuff away instead of deal with it and kind of have her really look at all the ways that's impacting her. Yeah, I had her, I was like, you're going to hate me, but what you need to do is take all that stuff that you find that's from your mom that's pissing you off and put it all on the dining room table and send me a picture of it. Because until you see,
right,
like really objectively see, all you really have to do is get present to kind of an old tendency like this, and mm-hmm. It starts to form. It's the stuff that we just shove away and don't deal with that vexes us again and again. It always comes back.
Yeah. And also maybe things, you know, another common thing I often hear about is like fighting with your spouse, for example. And it's just funny. My husband and I don't fight very often anymore, but we used to hate each other, but we really moved past that. But it is funny now. I find that when we do have an argument or like when I'm irritated with him, it's always over the same thing. It's never, I mean, it's part of who he is and it's never going to change.
Right.
And probably whatever irritates him about me is part of who I am. And neither one of us needs to change is my point. I mean, but the things that we allow to become big things aren't really big things. We're using them. And I feel like this is a really bad example, but.
I bet it's not.
Oh, okay. Well, great. I'm hoping you can pick it up and run with it because I'm floundering here. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like what I think is the problem is not the problem.
Sure.
Same kind of thing.
Exactly.
I think I'm mad because like he didn't switch the laundry last night. That's why this is on my head, because he didn't switch the dang laundry and I was really irritated about it.
Yeah.
But really, was that really the problem? No, the problem was that I tried to fit too much into my day.
Mm-hmm.
I left last evening to go out and exercise at a really inconvenient time, and I knew it was probably an inconvenient time, and I went anyway and felt weird about it. And then when I got back, nothing was done the way it was supposed to be done, and I felt stressed. So it was like all of that led to me being mad about the laundry when the laundry was like probably number 99 on the list.
To me, that's about you feeling bad for leaving.
Yeah. And the thing is, it was like, I didn't even really feel, I mean, I wanted to go exercise and I was glad that I did it, mm-hmm. but like, it was kind of one of those snap decisions where when I went, I thought this was a really dumb, I should have just gone earlier in the day. It was a dumb time to go, blah, blah, blah. And part of me was like, why I should have set everything up ahead of time.
Right.
Better.
You should have set everything up ahead of time. I mean, like, what's the, you have to look at the, what good came out of you realizing in the moment what you needed and going to do it. And as a result, like, yeah, the laundry didn't get switched. But like, you have to look at the good versus right. the consequence.
Right. Which was really pretty minor.
Yeah. I mean, well, also another tool that I use a lot in coaching is thinking about what, about your energy level. And I'm okay. not talking about energy level like, yeah, I want to wake up and climb a mountain, or, ooh, I want to climb into bed. I'm not talking about like your stamina. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about like just your lens of how you view things.
Okay.
So like level, so the lowest level of energy is kind of apathy. Like, oh, whatever. What's the use? It's not going to happen. It never works out for me. You know, like,
right.
That's level one energy. It's also known as victim. And I have spent a lot of time in victim energy.
It's the worst.
It's the worst. We've all been there. It's like yeah. being a martyr. Oh, I'll just do it all.
Not only is it the lowest kind of energy, but it actually like sucks up energy. Like it actually yeah. is like the opposite of energy.
No, it absolutely does. It's yeah. like, that's where you release the stress hormones. It like right. costs energy just to be in that energy level. And an energy level higher than that is actually anger and like conflict.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, if all of a sudden you start to get pissed off at everybody, like people are just really irritating you, and usually you're just kind of like a whatever person, it doesn't really matter. That's actually progression.
Okay, well, that's yeah. good to know.
That was a huge revelation to me, because I always felt like, oh, you couldn't get angry, you might hurt somebody's feelings. But no, like it's more powerful. It still requires energy. It's the second lowest level of energy. It's not necessarily somewhere you want to hang out, but that's the energy of like kind of tit for tat, like, I was in this with my husband for a long time. Like, I cook dinner. I'm not doing dishes. You do the dishes. You know,
it's right. Like, why should I?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little bit of conflict. You know, it's conflict energy. It's sort of like, I need to come out ahead here. It's like the people who are taking you see them in the airport, their flight gets canceled. And so they stand in line and yell at the ticket agent.
And it's not right.
Yeah.
It's completely unproductive, but
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, and so I work with my clients about how to get into the higher levels of energy, which it's long, it's involved. But like just briefly, level three is kind of where you start to teeter totter between energy that requires energy and energy that feeds you. And it's like taking mm-hmm. responsibility, like I'm going to get what I need out of the situation. And it's a lot of like, if somebody lets you down, you rationalize why they're doing it and decide to forgive them. Like, oh, I understand why he didn't change the laundry, because he had a lot going on. And so even though I'm angry, well, it's cool. That would be level three. And level four is more about service. And it's really about helping, not fixing, you know?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So you would have just switched the laundry probably, because
right. yeah.
you just wanted the laundry to get done so that everything right. would flow smoothly the next day.
Yes.
And the level above that is like, what's looking for the win-win, looking for the opportunities and everything. Like, how can we all benefit from this? Like,
how can we make it so neither of us ever has to do the laundry again?
Yeah, totally. Well, it would be like, yeah. you know, it would be a text to your husband or a quick phone call. Like, man, I really need to work out. I kind of left things in disarray. Could you just handle the laundry for me so that we all have clean clothes tomorrow?
Right.
And then like, you would trust that it would be good
right.
for your husband to pitch in and like keep the household running in a way, and to see your kids see their dad doing the laundry, you know, like kind of looking for like how everything is right.
Well, you know, it's so funny. You're so right. Like, okay, just like walking through all those five steps. This has like mm-hmm. been a great little coaching session. Thanks, Kate. but it's funny how you can, what I feel like is, as I develop in my life personally,
mm-hmm.
but
are, yes.
I feel like I still go through all five of those phases. It's not like I've evolved to a level where I never get into one and two. Right. I mean, it's like sometimes something will happen and I can actually watch myself mm-hmm. go through those five levels in like 30 seconds.
Totally. Well, I mean, you bring up an important point, which is energy is, God, I cannot say this word, mercurial.
Mercurial, yes, that's a tough one.
You know, it can change in an instant. Like
right.
the flip of a coin. However, we all have, like, a posture that it's just like, you know, you go to yoga class and you stand up all nice and tall in yoga class, and then you go put on your street clothes and your normal shoes, and then you fall back into your left hip jutting out, which always
right.
juts out. And, you know, we all have kind of a place where we're really comfortable and where we've gotten all nice and cozy, nice and cozy.
Uh-huh.
And so that's when you can start to feel stuck. And so, yes, it does. Everybody has an instance where you can kind of see yourself going up and down the chain of the levels of energy, and everybody's going to get trigger. And it's not like you can really hang out in the highest levels of energy all the time.
Right.
You can all, it comes back to that noticing and choosing to
right.
read, right? It gives you a frame of like, okay, what if this didn't piss me off? Like, what's the opportunity here? Boom, you're in level 5.
And the far and the further up the ladder you go, I find the better I feel. And it's like you think that's not going to be the case because when you're angry or when you're tit for tat or when you're apathetic, it seems like it's going to be so hard and it's going to make you feel like you lost out or it's not fair or like you're giving more than you should be giving. But then really, when you're in that place of service, you feel so much better. Like, I would so much rather just pitch in 110% if I have to.
Yeah.
And feel better about everything than pitch in 90% just to see if everyone else is going to bring up, put in their 10%. You know what I mean? And it makes it sound really wimpy and like I'm condoning like being a pushover, and I'm totally not.
Yeah, no.
That's not what it's about. To me, it's all about making my life the way I want it to be myself. And then other people feed on that energy too. It's like you can really change the way that the feel and the tenor of a household.
Absolutely. That is like the most exciting thing about this work, I think. And, you know, I work with a lot of moms. So we, as a population, tend to have a problem putting ourselves first and like focusing on ourselves. And when they're giving me their credit card number, you know, they're like, I feel so guilty. And the thing is that just by focusing on yourself and creating, like starting to operate from a different level of energy and releasing a lot of angst that then, you know, it's like contact angst in your household that is no longer, but just by embodying a new way of being, you make it possible for other people to do it too. And it's amazing. I've seen it work wonders in my own, like my husband, totally love him. He's a slob. he's a self-admitted slob. And I had just resigned myself. Like, I'm the one who packs the suitcase. I'm the one who unpacks the suitcase. I'm the one who takes the stuff for the dry cleaners. Cause otherwise I would just get, you know, pissed. Like, why aren't you unpacking the suitcase? I have to pack for you. So I would just do it. And the other day he went on a business trip. And I was doing laundry anyway, and I was like, I'm going to go find a suitcase and just, like, get his undies, put them in the washer. And I couldn't find the suitcase. And I was like, where's that damn suitcase? I'm cursing. I hope that's okay. And so
I'll put a parental advisory at the beginning.
So I was, you know, I looked all over the house. I couldn't find it. I was like, I'm going to look in the closet because that's where we keep the suitcase when it's empty. There's no way this suitcase is in the closet, but I'm going to look in there because it's the only place I haven't looked. And there was the suitcase. Like, it's, you know, you can't necessarily predict the way it's going to allow someone to transform, but it shows up in all these really interesting ways. He also came home one day and was like, I signed up for a personal trainer. He goes, he's been going for 2.5 months now, 3 times a week to see a personal trainer. And it's so amazing because it gives him an outlet for his stress, which then improves the relationship. It takes care of his health, which is something I don't have to worry about anymore. You know what I mean? Like, and it's because, I mean, it's not direct, it's not a direct correlation, but I know it's because I started working with a coach. I started making changes in my business. I started like just getting, not being mired down in like muck and angst. And when you show up differently, other people look at you and they say, oh, I could do that too.
Right. Yeah. And your energy feeds them.
Yeah.
Instead of sucking away from them. Yeah.
It's contagious.
Yeah.
And it's not something you have to have a direct conversation with somebody about. You just kind of like let them see you being in that energy level. And it's like, wow.
So the takeaway for me is, if you're listening to this in your kitchen right now and you're stewing because somebody else was supposed to unload the dishwasher and they didn't do it, take out the trash and they didn't do it, there's probably a more, I don't know. It's like, and it's, I don't want to be the one, I don't want to be the mom who's like, just do everything yourself because you can't count on anybody else to do it. And that's not at all what this is about. But I think it's more about just taking responsibility for the things that bother you. And also, I think sometimes if you spend a lot of time in your house, if you spend more time at home than other people, other members of your family, I'm here way more than anybody else. My kids are all at school. My husband works from home sometimes, but he's gone a lot. So for me, everything in the house, I feel much more intently than anybody else. Intensely, I mean. So like, if the kitchen's a mess, I care 300 times more than anybody else cares, you know? So, and you can't always make other people, like, I don't care about the car. The car can be like, you know, a holy terror and it doesn't bother me at all. But, you know, it's like our different realms sometimes I think are just feel more, I don't know, they're more triggers for us or whatever. And then we think, why doesn't everybody else care as much as I care?
Right.
And they don't. Sorry, I just don't.
Yeah. Oh, well, and the takeaway for me too is to, like, you know, when you transform the way you think about, like, household chores, I was talking about this earlier.
Yeah.
Washing the dishes can become your time to decompress. Like, when you True. Take away your angst about doing chores, it kind of takes away other people's resistance to it too.
Right. That's very, very true. And you can actually, I mean, it's funny that I even brought up laundry as being, well, we could go on about the laundry all day, but we do have to wrap this up at some point. But here's another thing. Going back to that laundry example, which just occurred to me. Usually I decided a long time ago I was going to stop hating doing the laundry. I just decided it was dumb. I was like putting it off till the weekend. And then I have, you know, 5 kids. So right. I'd have this monster load of laundry. And then I'd have to spend like all day Sunday
right.
folding and putting away, which is the worst. So I decided I'm going to do a load of laundry every day. I don't even bother sorting it really unless it's like disgusting or white or something. But I just do a load of laundry every day, like clockwork, and then I sit in front of the TV and I watch some silly show like, you know, Chopped on Food Network or something, which is actually one of my favorite shows that is on all the time. That's why I like it so much. But, and I'm going to sit and fold this laundry, and this is going to be my time that I'm going to enjoy myself. I'm going to fold this laundry. It's just like a relaxing thing. So I've really started to associate laundry with relaxation, strangely.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And I think part of what I was also mad about last night is that I kind of was – when I left, I thought, this is so dumb, but I thought, oh, now John's going to get to do the laundry. And then he didn't even yeah. do it. And I was mad because, like, here he had the opportunity to do the laundry and he didn't do it. Now that I vocalized that, I sound like a lunatic. But
No, you don't sound like a lunatic. That's the power of just, like, getting it out in the open.
Right.
Because the next time that happens, you're going to remember, you're going to look at it differently.
Right. Yeah. And I was like regretful about walking. Like that was the one thing I thought, oh, I kind of wish I was going to be around to sit and fold laundry and watch TV tonight. And then I got home and I got, you know, busy like getting the kids to bed and all this stuff. And then turns out it actually never got done. And I could have done it. It's such a silly thing. But you know, the brain, we fixate on silly things, don't we, sometimes? Or they seem silly.
Oh, absolutely. Are you kidding me? But however, those silly, quote unquote, silly things that you fixate on are really, you pull the string on them a little bit and they are so like, what's the word I'm looking for? Revelatory. Like they,
right.
they lead you to an insight. And so
yes.
when you were saying, like, when you were like, I don't know if this is a good example or not, it seems silly. I was thinking, this is probably a really good example.
Oh, that's great. Well, Kate, this has been so fun and actually this has been very revelatory for me. Thank you for this session. I'm actually feeling a lot clearer about some things, and hopefully people listening weren't too bored by my laundry story, but got how they can, you know, take their own personal laundry story, which
laundry story.
For them could look like anything from getting the oil changed to, you know, any number of things, towels on the bathroom floor, whatever. Whatever your personal hang-up is. There's more to it. And Kate, so tell me, I know you do coaching sessions. And so can people find out about all the stuff at Ms. Mind Body?
They can. You can click on coaching once you get there.
Okay, so that's msmindbody.com. Yeah. Kate has is a weekly newsletter?
Yes, it is.
It's fabulous. You need to sign up for her newsletter. I get it in my e-box. I get it in my inbox. And it seriously is just a nice little break for me. It's once a week. I just sit and go, ah. So sign up for Kate's email newsletter at her site.
If anybody who's listening to this and it's kind of like, ooh, there's something I want to pull the thread on and see what's really going on there.
I want to talk about my laundry.
Email me at kate@msmindbody.com and we can set up. I offer something. It's called a Serenity Strategy Session, and it's like a 30-minute call where we really look at something and see what light we can shed on it and see if it might be something that would benefit from the support of working with a coach.
Great. That's fabulous. So that's kate@msmindbody.com. Email her and she will help you change your laundry issues. Oh, just joking. Okay. This has been very fun, Kate. It's been great having you on. And hopefully we can have you on again in the future because I think this is very helpful.
Yeah. I love it. Thanks, Megan.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Kitchen Hour podcast. Again, if you want to find out anything more about the show that was mentioned today, you can check out the show notes at thekitchenhour.com/episode8. If you want to learn more about Kate Hanley and her coaching and some of the yoga workshops she puts on, you can check out her site. It's msmindbody.com. That's msmindbody.com. I would love to see you over at the blog at thekitchenhour.com. And you can also feel free to shoot me an email anytime if you want to let me know anything you'd like to hear on the show or guests you'd like to see. It's Megan, M-E-A-G-A-N, at thekitchenhour.com. Thanks a lot, and I'll see you next week. Thank you.